TXHT Serious Hockey Talk for Serious Hockey Fans. Michael here, along with Russell. He just nods his head. He keeps forgetting that this is an audio only podcast. Just nods the head like, hi,
hey, Mike.
Here.
How you doing, my man?
Doing good, bud. Just making fun of you because it's like with Russell. Nods head.
Nods head.
It's like. This is the part where you say hi to the audience, you schmuck.
But hi, audience.
But we're recapping the Mighty Ducks series on Disney Plus. We'll talk a little bit of NHL. We obviously didn't do an episode last week because just scheduling conflicts, like working for Amazon, doing some other stuff. It just kind of got in the way a little bit, and my schedule got a little impacted as a result. So we're doing a double. We're doing last week's episode and this past weekend's episode back to back in this episode, starting with what was the episode called again?
This week or last week?
Last week.
Last week was Hockey Moms? Or was it?
Yeah, Hockey Moms. Yes. So yeah. Last week was Hockey Moms. This weekend was Cherry Pickers. So with Hockey Moms, obviously, that was more of a Hockey Mom-centric episode where you had the Hockey Mom Challenge and Gordon and Alex's relationship is continuing to grow and blossom along with Evan, which is great. And Lauren Graham has kind of a mean slap shot.
Yo, good for her, right? 40 miles an hour? 41 miles an hour. I'm sorry, 41 miles an hour.
Only to get disqualified on a technicality so the Ducks can win.
It's right. We know she won, and that stupid executive lady knows she won, so it's okay.
Yeah. It's not like that's ever going to get brought up ever again.
Oh, no, I think that's gone now.
Oh, except it does get brought up. It gets brought up in Cherry Pickers. So it's the scene where the executive...
He says to her... No.
The executive mom and Alex are in the office, and executive mom, which I think is like actually Sophie's mom, gives...
No. Sophie's mom is someone different. The executive mom is... I forget who her kid is, but they're... I thought they were the same person too. But Sophie's mom and the executive person are two different
people.
Okay.
Well, anyways, the executive mom, she gives like a project or something to Alex to work on. And she actually brings up, like, oh, where's that slapshot energy that I remember, you know, seeing from you? So it's like, so it actually is brought up. But quick thoughts on Hockey Moms, because I didn't rewatch that episode before recording.
I've never heard of a team ever doing a thing like that in minors or peewee or anything. I think the concept is really cool, but I think if my mom personally had to do that, it wouldn't be pretty. And I love my mom to death, but she cannot play hockey.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to see my mom try to do that either. Just no. Maybe my dad, but not my mom. No. and the biggest reason is because my mom wouldn't even be able to get on ice skates anyways.
Yeah.
Too many foot surgeries and stuff like that. But then you have, it was an interesting episode. It's actually kind of nice because that's the good thing about a TV series is that you're able to kind of, you know, help build and grow and develop relationships and characters in a TV series a lot better than you can in a movie. And we're definitely getting that very well. And I like the slow build of what they're doing, especially with Gordon. Like, that was an indicator. And this next episode, which was Cherry Pickers, was another really good one, which Evan's dad comes into the picture. And, you know, obviously that causes conflict, wing eating contest, which that's just disgusting in itself. And kidnapping, because good on Gordon Bombay. Let's go kidnap people.
Let's go on Gordon from helping that guy be a better dad and not be a jackass.
Yeah, I know. It was like, it was like, oh, but I got this gig. I got to go to the airport. It's like, oh, there's my exit. Nah, you ain't going there.
Wait, aren't you supposed to go that way? No.
Nah. Oh, by the way, the doors. I like also how they establish when Gordon takes Evan to the bar to see his dad play with his band.
Oh, and that
that daddy goes on. It's like, oh, no. You have to come in through the driver's door and go and slide over. Oh, no, don't touch the stick. That's what keeps the glove compartment closed. It's like, oh, and the radio's stuck on folk music, and you'll hate it, and then you'll just learn to hate it even more. Although it's interesting because the music actually isn't playing when the father's in the truck with him.
You know, I didn't even think of that, but it is silent. So maybe he's had the radio off. I don't know.
Maybe he's able to turn the radio off. He just can't change the station. The station just won't change. But the funny thing is like, as the father tries to get out at a red light, he's like, oh yeah, the door's broken.
I'm sorry, pal. You're coming with me.
And then he takes him to the game, and then he sits him down. He's like, Eleven's Evan. It's like, Eleven's my son, right? It's like, yes. Yes, it is. You know, but and then of course, as the game goes on and Evan literally scores all 5 goals.
I mean, some incredible goals that we've never seen out of him before either.
Well, I mean, given how he's only scored 1 goal the entire season so far up until this point. How many saves does Coob have?
I don't know, man.
We've never seen him make a save.
Yeah, we never see him make a save. He just kind of stands there.
Yeah, I'm like, I also don't like what they did to the Hawks.
How they're bad? I think that's fine.
No, not the fact that they're bad. I mean, yeah, you have to have a thing where it's like teams digress after a while and then they have to kind of rebuild to get better again. Like, I'm okay with that. I hate how they look. Like, they should have stayed in black. Like,
yeah, but
I like the Ducks look because it actually was a good gradual change from what they were wearing from D3, the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
Like, they kind of kept that jersey concept, but they did tweaks to it, and they also kept the colors, so they remain consistent. The Hawks just did like a complete 180. It was like they went from the black with the cool looking hawk and said Hawks on it to this orange jersey with blue shoulders and a weird looking logo, and I'm like, I don't like the look of this team. They deserve to be 1-5. You know?
Yeah, right. I mean, but
just on looks alone, by the way. Just
low key, I like the Don't Bothers jerseys. I think they're kind of cool.
And as we've said on the show before, please sell them.
Yeah, please. That and the Ducks jerseys. I'd love one of each.
Yeah. And like, actually, that's the one thing. The Cardinals were the only team to kind of keep their consistent look from the first movie. Like, that's the other reason why it kind of bothers me with the Hawks. It's like, you could keep, like, you did the tweaks to the Ducks. You kept the Cardinals essentially looking the same. So why did the Hawks have to be the one that you overhauled the look of the team on?
I don't know. But something I thought was funny was the game where Evan's dad shows up and, you know, they're not playing well. You literally have Sophie on your team now, and she couldn't get 1 goal, and she's supposedly the sniper in this game, and Evan has to do all the work. why did you sign this person? Why did you go out of your way to get her and she doesn't do one thing in that game?
Sophie was like non-existent in this episode.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Like, I don't understand. You made this big appeal to get Sophie on the team. And then this is the one episode that she is completely non-existent. Like, you see her on the ice for like a timeout or something. But after that, you don't like she's not. But also, let's put this out there as well. This episode was about Lauren and Maya too. Big Lauren and Maya episode, because this was them essentially learning about each other, and in a way, kind of the girl cliques that you have in school. Like, if you know about, I don't know about the cliques for girls or anything like that. I have no luck with the ladies anyways, unlike you, Mr. Oh, I have a girlfriend. we'll hang out in DC and I'll just be a third wheel. I know how it works. I know how it works. But anyways, but they work on that and they actually put a really good focus on Lauren and Maya's relationship. Like, not just on the ice, but off of the ice too. And it actually gives Nick a chance, because like, obviously they're having issues because they did that TikTok video together and Maya doesn't actually upload it to TikTok. She does a different video with somebody else. That's what causes the strife between the two. And like, Maya's like, hey, let's talk about this at hockey, blah, blah, blah. And then like, Lauren's then with her cosplay friends and like Maya tries to apologize and she does the same thing to Maya, and it's like politics, you know.
And then they, you know, and then Disney fashion, they figure it out.
Well, Nick does the speech during the timeout when they're tied and says, y'all two need to get together because you two are what makes this play work.
Yeah.
For the reverse double. And it's like, you know, so that was always kind of cool that like that was a defining moment for Nick right there in the episode. And, you know, and then it ends this episode with Lauren and Maya making up at school because Lauren's trying to dress cool like Maya's crew, and Maya dresses up in cosplay to, you know, make Lauren feel accepted and stuff like that. So it was a nice moment there, and it was a great character and relationship building there too.
I also thought another great character development moment from these two episodes was the sleepover at Nick's, when Evan and Coop go there and Coop is just glued to his phone, of course, and then the moms take the phone away and they go on their little secret mission, and you find out Coop can sing and you're just like, where did this come from?
And then they get the phone back and Coop's phone dies. So it was all for naught anyways.
Just team bonding, purely team bonding.
And I like the fact that we're seeing that for these episodes, and it makes us even more excited. And again, it stinks that we don't have Sophie. Oh, that was the big thing about Hockey Moms. That was how the Don't Bothers officially got Sophie.
They won the Hockey Moms competition.
Well, no, they won, but they lost on the technicality. But the thing that the father saw was he saw the passion in her eyes and the happiness in her eyes when the Don't Bothers won. And then he saw the disappointment when the technicality happened. So he went ahead and signed the permission slip for her to play for the Don't Bothers. And I think that was a really great moment in that episode too. Because that was a defining moment. But then, of course, Sophie is like a non-existent factor in this episode, which is like really weird. Like, you go through all that effort to get her on your team and then nothing happens. But also at the end of the episode, that one kid, Travis, tells Evan that Coach T was at the game and wants to have a talk with Evan about the Ducks.
Heel turn that we never saw coming.
Well, and actually, to be brutally honest, it's a really great prelude to what next episode is going to be, which is Spirit of the Ducks.
The episode we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, exactly. Because we've been wanting to see some of the originals come back. It'll be great to see Cliff running double as Matt as Averman. That'll be great. It's good to see Matt Daughtry and Eldon Henson.
I'm so excited to see Eldon Henson.
Yeah.
But no Joshua Jackson.
Or Sean Weiss.
Well, I mean, that's understandable.
And, well, for now, I mean, like we talked about before, he just got sober. He's working on it. If he can maintain it and this show gets more seasons, then...
He'll probably be there. I think what you said earlier in the year is probably right, that we'll see Joshua Jackson next season.
We're in the season three, because the showrunner has openly said that, like, it sounds like he's already working on season three at this point.
It sounds like
he's already done season two, but he's just working on season three because he knows where everything's going to go at this point.
Nice.
So that's why we keep speculating about, like, how this season will end and how you go into next season and the season after. So, but yeah, that was two great episodes. I like to see, what's his name? Sam, the Daredevil kid.
Yeah.
I like to see him get a little bit more development.
I think as we go along, they all will, like, and one.
Oh no, definitely. I definitely think they all will, but like, he's kind of like the one who's been he's been on the team since day one, but he hasn't had any real development. Like with Logan, Logan wasn't really noticed this episode either, but he's at least had some good development put in him.
It seems we had two characters get developed last episode. We saw Ku get more development. I think one of the episodes down the line will either feature one of the both of them. We'll get there, because Logan's dad kind of has a little bit of development already from the Hockey Moms
episode. That was funny. Yeah. It's like, hi, I'm Logan's dad. I'm not really a mom. his mama kind of left us. Here's a picture of Logan. I like how they tried to take a lighthearted approach to it, but also took a seriousness to it at the same time. It's like, you know, so it's kind of nice that they did that. But yeah, so NHL talk real quick. So Vegas, Colorado, and Minnesota have all clinched playoff berths.
And I will say the eventual Stanley Cup champion, it will be one of those three, because I've been thinking Colorado's going to win the whole year.
Yeah, I'm okay with Colorado. I'm 100% okay with it. I believe Landeskog, MacKinnon, Rantanen, great trio there. Cale Makar, Sam Girard. You know, they got good defense as well. Good goaltending when they're healthy with Philip Grubauer. I'm okay with that pick. Obviously, we don't know who else. I mean, we kind of know who else is in, because you and I were looking at the standings and kind of breaking things down and stuff like this. And like, obviously, you have a three-way race between the Caps, the Islanders, and the Penguins. It's really now, because the Islanders, Penguins, and Caps have all played 48 games, the Islanders have to get really lucky. They try to get first place, but they're essentially in. But it's really between Pittsburgh and Washington. And the team that's going to help the Capitals get first place is going to be the Buffalo Sabres. So
I think the Capitals will eventually.
And for the record, I'm not saying the Caps are going to win the cup. We're just talking about the division.
All right. In terms of divisions, let me go check quick. I'll give you my division picks right now. We go to these standings. Let's see. Vegas clinched. But I think Colorado is going to win the division.
They have two games. They're four games back. They're two games in hand.
But I think it's entirely possible with the way Nathan MacKinnon is on like a 14-game point streak, playing out of his mind. Cale Makar is playing great. Gabriel Landeskog is having a great year. Colorado, look, I really think Colorado can take the top spot from Vegas, but we'll see.
So just to throw this out there, Vegas and Colorado do play on Wednesday, the 28th.
That's huge.
And then they play one more time on Monday, May 10th. So
Vegas also quietly on a 9-game winning streak.
Yeah. To put this in perspective, for Colorado, they play Monday against St. Louis, Wednesday, Vegas, Friday, San Jose, Saturday, San Jose. They actually do 4 straight games with San Jose, starting with Friday. So Friday, Saturday, the following Monday, and Wednesday is 4 straight games against San Jose. Then they do 2 games against LA. Then they play Vegas again, and then they do a back-to-back with LA to end their season. For Vegas, they don't play again until Wednesday when they face Colorado. Ooh. So Colorado actually plays St. Louis for us tomorrow because it's Sunday. And actually, this episode will go out today. So Colorado is actually going to stay somewhat in shape because they got that one game tomorrow, whereas Vegas doesn't play again. They played last night against the Ducks, and they don't play for 3 days until they play Colorado. Then they play Arizona on Friday and Saturday. They play Minnesota on that. Then they do Minnesota back-to-back, St. Louis back-to-back, the game against Colorado on the 10th, and then they end their season against San Jose on the 12th. So you have 2 games between these two teams, and Colorado having the 2 games in hand, that could give them the opportunity to take first place from Vegas, but you also have to see Vegas lose eventually too, not just to Colorado, but to somebody else. Yeah. And I think that will be a real deciding factor. If, like, sure, they can lose both games to Colorado, but if they keep winning the way they are, Vegas will take first place in the division.
Sure. And they easily could, but it's definitely going to come down to one of those two. As for the Central, it's super tight, but I think Carolina will eventually close it out. They have 2 games in hand on the Panthers. They're already ahead in points percentage. It seems no matter who they have in goal, whether it's Mrazek or Nedeljkovic, they're playing extremely
or James hard. Reimer.
Yeah, or James Reimer. Andrei Svechnikov has been heating up as of late. The team is just so solid, and it wouldn't surprise me if they went all the way to the Stanley Cup final, to be honest with you. They are really good.
And here's the thing, low key, this is a team that's been getting better every season too.
Yes.
Especially since Rod Brind'Amour has taken over as coach. And, like, dare I say it, anytime Carolina makes it to the playoffs and they actually make it out of the first round, they always go deep. They always go conference finals or Stanley Cup finals.
Always.
Just how Carolina is if they get out of the first round. And I know you said Colorado is your pick to win the cup. Low key, I could see Carolina winning.
Yeah.
Carolina is
you're
that
not crazy for saying that. You're not crazy.
Carolina is that dangerous. And in a way, like, looking at it too, another low-key pick could be Florida.
Yeah, you think the Panthers can do it?
I'm not saying that the Panthers will do it. I'm just saying the Panthers low-key could do it. Because, we're looking at the standings. Obviously, Florida's played 49 games. Carolina's played 47. Tampa Bay's played 47. So Tampa and Carolina both have 2 games in hand on Florida. But you can't take away what Florida's been able to do this season. Especially under Joel Quenneville as coach, having this be a second season.
Jack Adams this year.
Yeah. So it's like Tampa. I mean, let's see here. Vegas is at 70 points. Colorado's at 66. Minnesota's at 65. Carolina's at 68. Florida's at 67. Tampa Bay's at 64. That just kind of gives you a little bit of perspective on, like, how tight those two divisions are between 3 teams.
Yeah.
So just to kind of throw that as an idea out there. We'll skip the East for now.
Even though
it's next. Well, we'll talk about the East last because that's our division. The North.
It's pretty clear based on everything from points to point percentage to how well the team is gelling. The Toronto will easily win the North division. But for Toronto, it's never been about making the playoffs. It's about making it and making a statement in the playoffs, which they have not been able to do under this Austin Matthews, John Tavares, Mitch Marner, William Nylander era. And hopefully this is the year they can put it together. But, I mean, for their sake and for their fans' sake. But I think at the end of the day...
Well, it depends on who they get in the first round. Are they going to get Montreal, which will most likely happen? I mean, they could have a chance. I mean, I was watching Hockey Night in Canada last night, and like, there's apparently like TSN put out a thing saying that like, are the Leafs playing dirty? And the point of that is that, you know, you bring guys in like Jake Muzzin on defense, who plays a more hard style game. You bring in a guy like Wayne Simmonds, who plays a more hard style game. So you bring a bit of more of an edge to this team. Could that be what pushes the Leafs finally over the thing? Because it's like, here's the thing with Edmonton. They score all those goals, but you know, their defense, like they have a good defense, but they have forwards who don't play defense. Like key guys don't play defense. And that's always kind of a problem sometimes. And that's actually why they're currently in third place in their division. As Russell is not paying attention.
Sorry, I was reading something real quick. What did you say about third in the division?
It's one of the reasons why Edmonton's third in the division. It's because defense is a key thing. And their goaltending.
Best players in the league, but they need to worry about the rest of that lineup.
Yeah, especially more so in goaltending, because you got Koskinen and you got Smith. So it's like, You're kind of in a balancing act there.
What's interesting is last summer when was on the market, Jacob Markstrom was on the market. The report came out that, you know, the Oilers really wanted him. And I remember when he officially signed with Calgary, the reason why things fell through with Edmonton was basically because of Mikko Koskinen's contract.
They
couldn't fit him.
Peter Chiarelli strikes again.
Yeah, Peter Chiarelli striking from the grave, essentially, because I'm pretty sure Markstrom would have gone to play with the Oilers, but it just they couldn't get the price there.
Yeah. And not only that, but he didn't have to change the colors of his pads when he went to Calgary.
Yeah,
when it came from the black skate jersey, the Calgary, he didn't really have to do much changing of the colors of his pads. It worked out. And then, of course, obviously the one interesting note, I mean, we're not going to discount Winnipeg. Winnipeg's going to make the playoffs. Edmonton will make the playoffs. The one team that could make things interesting, and we were talking about this before we recorded, is Vancouver. They've played 41 games, so they got like 15 games left to play, something like that.
Yeah.
And they have a better winning points percentage than Calgary does. And depending on how they do, especially the fact that the last four games may not get played because they're considered as to be determined for time, which leads you to believe that they may not play them if they feel that they're at a point where it's like, all right, we need to get the playoffs going. Let's get playing type deal.
Yeah.
Vancouver could make a really interesting case for the fourth spot in the division, because that, that point, what will happen in the division, and this is actually would help out Edmonton too, because Winnipeg has a points percentage of 0.606. Edmonton's is 0.622.
Yeah.
So it could make things a little interesting where if those last four games don't get played, which three of those are against Calgary and one is against Edmonton, and they go for the North Division 2 points percentage to determine playoffs, you could have Toronto 1, Edmonton 2, Winnipeg 3. And depending on how Vancouver and Montreal fare out over the next couple weeks, you could either have Montreal in 4th or Vancouver in 4th.
I would love it. It would be a great story if Vancouver made 4th and made it in. It really would be.
Yeah. And then going to the East. I'm sorry. I'm not saying the long, drawn-out names.
Mass Mutual East Division.
Scotia North. I get why they did it. They need the revenue. It's okay. It's... You do you, NHL. Just don't put ads on the freaking jerseys. we can have a conversation about that later. The East, the Caps are in first. Pittsburgh's in second. The Islanders are in third with 66, 65, and 63 points, respectively. All teams have played 48 games. Obviously, Pittsburgh's playing today, which means the Caps and the Islanders will both have a game in hand on the Penguins. And the Caps and the Islanders play each other again on Tuesday, which actually will probably be the deciding factor in what happens to the Islanders.
I still say the Caps are winning that division.
I mean, I'm okay with the idea of the Caps winning the division, but you kind of want to see where the other teams kind of come in. And we were talking about your Rangers, which, by the way, you owe me a daily.
Yes,
or,
I do.
Or a weekly.
I wrote a lot for BSB this week, and now I owe you your piece, so that will be coming soon.
Yes, yes, you do. stay tuned. But Boston's in fourth currently with 60 points. The Rangers are at 54, so the Rangers are 6 points back, but the Bruins hold two games in hand. But the one thing that the Capitals are rooting for, and in a way the Rangers can root for, is for Buffalo.
Yeah, if Buffalo keeps sticking their nose where it doesn't belong.
Yeah, because let me take a look at Boston's schedule real quick. Boston plays Pittsburgh today and Tuesday, so that's obviously something that the Caps and Islanders are going to be looking at, what happens between Pittsburgh and Boston. But then Thursday, the Bruins play Buffalo, and Saturday they play Buffalo. So those are two games really – actually, four games in particular, the two with the Penguins and the two with the Sabres, that the Rangers are going to be paying close attention to, because, sure, the Bruins have two games in hand, but if they lose a couple of those games and then the Rangers pick up some wins here, you could have a conversation about the Rangers being in the playoffs instead of the Boston Bruins.
I think the thing that really sealed it was – when the Rangers played the Devils four straight times, the Rangers won all four times, but the Bruins didn't lose. And that was, you know, I thought that if the Bruins faltered a little after that week, it would have been possible. And then the Rangers just needed to keep winning. And then that game against the Islanders when they got smacked, and then the loss against the Flyers kind of put the nail in the coffin for me. And you know what? It's okay, because, you know, the Rangers, again, it still wasn't about this year, as cool as it would have been to make the playoffs. It's still about building and getting the kids developed and ready for more ice time. And to David Quinn's credit, I've been hard on him all year, but for these last 10 games, it seems he's finally putting them in top six roles. He's altering the power play. Zach Jones, the kid they just signed out of UMass, is playing on the power play. Keandre Miller's getting power play time. Kaapo Kakko's being... he's playing with Chris Kreider and Filippito right now, which I like that line. I like the Vitali Kravtsov is being moved up with Panarin and Strom. And of course, at the end of the day, Lafreniere is getting to play with Zibanejad and Buchnevich, and he's already looking great there. So,
well, I think part of the thing that you have to put in mind with what Quinn had to do is at the beginning, the first thing that they had to do was, like, you're going to have that pressure of you need to make the playoffs. So he's going to kind of put guys in different positions right away to start the season, and as the season builds, you kind of see how the team is progressing, and then as the team progresses, you see what changes you have to make. Obviously now they're probably looking at it going, like, we're not going to make the playoffs, or we may have a chance to make the playoffs, but our chances are a little slimmer than they would have been, like, maybe say 2 weeks ago. Let's experiment some more. Let's move guys into different spots and let's see how they flourish. Because you just can't take a young kid and just throw him on the top line right away. You end up destroying the guy after a while, especially if he ain't performing and you put all that pressure on him. Right. Especially in a big market like New York City.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like with McDavid, who, unlike Lafreniere, McDavid was ready to just explode on the league right off the bat. Alex Ovechkin was ready to
Connor McDavid.
Yeah, Alex Ovechkin when he came in the league, and Sidney Crosby when he came in the league. Those, like, guys were ready to explode right off the bat. Like, there were differences. Like, you have differences with other guys. So, like, what was it? McDavid, Matthews, Crosby, and Ovechkin. Those are four first overall picks that were legit first-line guys the moment they came in the league. but not every first round pick is a straight up number one defenseman, top line guy, you know, stuff like that. It's like you have to take them and you have to develop, you actually have to take the time to develop these guys. So, and I think that's what Quinn's really been doing is, like you said, you've been hard on him, but you're giving him the credit for what he's doing now. And it's like, maybe that was the plan all along. Maybe the plan was just to ease a lot of these guys into it. And then,
I think,
you know, stuff like that. And then now that they're building that confidence up now, imagine carrying that confidence over into next season.
Yeah. And it next season is definitely going to be the year where the Rangers start entering the contention phase, because from everywhere you see in the hockey world, and most people think that the Rangers are going to do one big, like they're going to do something big this summer. And what that is going to be, I'm not sure entirely what that is going to be yet, but I know it's going to involve the center ice position. The Rangers know they need to strengthen their center ice. They're fine on the wings. Their wing depth with Lafreniere and Kreider, Panarin, Kako, Kravtsov is fine for years. Their defense core with Jones and Miller and Lindgren and Fox and Trouba, with Nils Lundqvist coming, who was the best defenseman in the SHL this year, is set for years to come also. Now, the last thing you need to do is you get one more really good center to fill out your depth in the middle, and you let it rock. And next year is the year that, you know, if you're Jeff Gordon, you tell David Quinn, all right, you know,
play the kids.
Easy Street is over. It's time to get back into the playoffs. We're the New York blank and Rangers. We need to be back there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, let the kids loose, essentially.
Yeah. It's time. Like, next, this year I was fine with another missing playoffs. You can use whatever high pick you get as part of a trade package to acquire a big center, whether it be Eichel or Barkov or.
And hey, you're buying out D'Angelo at the end of the season.
Exactly. So there's definitely space. And I mean, personally, for me, what I wish they would do, they're not going to do it because of the GM old boys club rules. But for the Rangers to kill everything with one move and not have to trade anybody on the roster, I would offer sheet Elias Pettersson and send Vancouver into cap hell. But no one does these things, even though it's legal in the CBA to do them. And Vancouver has like $11 million in cap space to sign Pettersson, Hughes, and like a bunch more players to fill out their roster.
They're not trading Pettersson though. Let's be honest.
They won't. But again, why wouldn't you, if you're the Rangers, you don't need any more first round picks after this year. Why wouldn't you, if you're the Rangers, not sign Pettersson to like a 70 or $75 million deal over 7 years and force Vancouver to make a decision?
Yeah, because then let's put it in perspective like this. Lafreniere, if he doesn't sign his contract during the season, then another team's going to do the same thing to him, or they're going to do it to Capo,
and then they're going to. That's completely in their right to do that,
and they're going to. And that's the reason why it's like, all right, you want to try to put us in cap hell, we'll put you in cap hell.
But again, at the same time, why would you not try to get a player? Like, for me, what ruined the whole offer sheet thing for me was last year when the Islanders had no cap space, nothing, and they let Barzal just. Oh, we're not going to do anything. Let's let Lou do all his trades and figure it out and nobody bother him. That's when I figured out GMs are in the NHL. Like, they don't care if their team is skating by.
Well, also, let's be honest. You're also taking something that's like the Caps weren't going to give an offer sheet to Barzal.
No, but there's teams that
because they didn't have the cap space. They didn't have the cap space to do it. The Flyers weren't going to do it because they didn't have the cap space to do it. The Rangers weren't going to do it. The Penguins weren't going to do it. You know, the Bruins weren't going to do it because they let go of Zdeno Chara because they had cap issues. That's one of the reasons they let Chara go outside of the direction that they wanted to go with the team. You know, so any of the teams in the East wouldn't have done it anyways, mostly for cap reasons, because they wouldn't have been able to fit Barzal under the cap without having to trade away somebody to make it happen.
But again, why wouldn't you do that if there's literally a number one center sitting there and the GM of this number one center is fumbling around, literally had to get rid of Devin Toews for nothing.
Yeah.
And no one jumps on it. Like, it will never make sense.
Well, let's also be honest. You're also talking about Lou Lamoriello, who everybody fears.
For no reason. What has he done to earn GM of the year? What did he really do last year to earn that award? Nothing. He traded...
He probably has stuff on Bettman that he can blackmail him with.
Like, it was so ridiculous to me that he won GM of the Year because he signed like a third liner to a 6-year, $6 million deal in Pageau and did whatever else he did. Look, anyway, this isn't about Lou. This is about offer sheeting. But anyway, back to what I was talking about.
But that's the whole point. You brought up the Islanders, and that's where Lou comes into play.
The whole thing with me is just that the Rangers are going to make a big trade this summer for a center iceman. I would put like a lot of money down on that because that's the last position they need to fully get strength in this lineup. They have help coming everywhere except for the center ice position. Now, the Pettersson thing would really solve everything. They don't need the first round picks. They have the cap space to afford them this summer, and Vancouver probably would not be able to re-sign Quinn Hughes at that point if the Rangers offered Pettersson that amount of money. So at the end of the day,
you got to look at who else is under contract for Vancouver, because they may have some parts that they may not be bringing back after the season that are just going to be free agents. I mean, you got to look at who's under contract and who's not. So in theory, they have $11 million to work with right now. They may have a bit more moving into the summer, depending on who's no longer under contract and who they don't bring back and stuff.
I mean,
because keep in mind, Jake Virtanen's name has been out there for a while to get moved from Vancouver.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
So it's like you move that contract, that probably opens up the space to sign both Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. So,
I mean, if they can do it, awesome. But, you know, if I was Jeff Gordon, I'd just be thinking about it. But, I mean, most likely scenario is Jack Eichel will either be on Broadway or playing in.
Well, depends about what happens with his neck.
Yeah. That is true. They'll have to make sure the health protocols, you know, they have to make sure he's healthy enough then to get to that level that he can play again. But if he does get traded, he's either going to be playing at the Staples Center or Madison Square Garden next season, almost guaranteed.
Oh, yeah. It's like, because he kind of controls where he's going to go.
Yeah. And LA can offer the better package based around just center prospects, but the New York Rangers have probably the deepest pipeline of prospects in the NHL right now, and they can offer them a bigger package. Maybe not the center prospects Buffalo would be looking for to fill that gap, but they can certainly give them a decent package enough where they would say, okay, we'll do it.
Yeah. And not only that, but the other thing, like going on back to the offer sheet deal, something to keep in mind, outside of the goaltenders that have been getting grabbed left and right every time they go up on waivers for especially up in the North Division, you've seen a lot of big names get put up on waivers this season to be put on the taxi squad, and nobody's been touching them.
Yeah.
And I think
Gostisbehere was one I was shocked by, that nobody took a chance on Gostisbehere.
That's because he has a big contract. That's why.
Yeah.
He's a guy who actually might get moved out of Philadelphia during the offseason. There's actually, you know, and again, depends on who you talk to. You know, people who, no offense, Russell, I know you're big into the advanced analytics, but the people who talk about the advanced analytics, they're the people who you don't listen to when it comes down to what's really going on with a team. Because Philly, and I see a lot of Flyers games. I see more Flyers games than I probably see Caps games sometimes. You can tell that the team is disinterested and they just want to get a coach fired.
You mean like Philadelphia? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, though, is that the problem is that the coach isn't the problem. It's the players that are a problem. Giroux has 1 year left at $8 million. He's an instant buyout.
They're not going to buy the captain out.
Doesn't matter who, if he wears the C or not. If they feel that he is not performing at the level that he should be performing at, which he is not at all for an $8 million player, they will buy him out. That is reality, because would you want an $8 million? Would you trade for an $8 million player who is not performing at all?
I don't think
who is not putting up the, who is not putting up the points, who is not being the leader that he is supposed to be. Would you trade for a player like that?
I mean, I don't think they're going to trade him. I think he's.
But that's the thing. No team is going to want him at $8 million. So what's the only other option to get rid of a player who is obviously trying to get a coach fired again? You buy him out. You send a message to the rest of your team, to the rest of your franchise, and say, we're not going to put up with this crap. If we're going to pay you to play, you're actually going to play. And that's why you do a buyout. Another guy who, a guy who won't get bought, a guy who won't get bought out, but could get moved via trade is Jake Voracek, because he's been part of the problem in Philadelphia. I mean, you could ask our friend Nick, who we do NHL 21 with. Nick has openly said, it's like, yeah, Voracek does a lot of passing. All he does is pass. It's time for him to move on. Gostisbehere.
Voracek is a guy I can see more than either of the than
but Gostisbehere could be a guy that gets moved too, because look at what's coming in the pipeline for the Flyers. The Flyers are now playing Sam Moran a lot more on defense, and he's becoming a kind of an impact guy for the Flyers. So they can kind of move. They definitely got some young guys coming up. Ron Hextall really brought in a lot of good prospects for Philadelphia. So that's reality. You can't just look at the advanced stats are not really good on Giroux anyways right now. The guy hasn't been working hard all season. You know,
I'm interested to see what his XGF percent. Let me see.
I have no idea what the hell that is, and I really don't care what the hell that is, because that sounds stupid.
How has Claude Giroux been doing this year? I'm gonna check right now on ice all scores. Let me just get team.
For the record, I don't believe in Corsi or any of that other stuff, because I think it's some of the dumbest stuff that's out there.
And I'm on the entirely other opposite end of that spectrum. I like using – and again, I like advanced analytics. But I also understand that you need advanced analytics and you need both. You can't just solely look at –
You know, here's the thing. You talk about that, how you need to have it. You know, my dad and I were talking about this a few nights ago. I think we were watching the Flyers-Caps game together. And when we were talking about it, yeah, Giroux has 11 goals, 22 assists for 33 points, and is a -3. You really want to pay $8 million for a guy who's only putting up 11 goals? And in the last five games, he's produced 11 shots, but 9 of them were against the Rangers and 2 of them were against the Capitals. He had no shots against the Islanders and no shots against the Penguins. Like, I'm just looking at like the straight up stats. But the other thing is that, like, so back in the, back in the 80s, right? The yeah. Swedes were like really dominant in international hockey. And it was because what the Swedes were doing was they were teaching systems. And this was actually kind of the same deal with the Soviets, which is why they're so dominant, because they were teaching systems. They weren't teaching skills. So these guys were teaching system-based hockey. And then eventually you would see the Swedes and, you know, and as we learned, like with the Soviet players, they would come over to America, play in the NHL, and they wouldn't pan out. And what you ended up learning was that because of what they're being taught, they're taught how to play system hockey, but they were not being taught skills. So what do? They still teach systems, but they introduce teaching skills. That's why you have guys like Ovechkin and guys like, you know, Peter Forsberg and Henrik Lundqvist, because they're teaching them skills. They're teaching them how to actually be more rounded hockey players outside of a system. It's the same deal now, because, you know, kids are being taught now at a young age about all the advanced analytics. And what's going to happen is that you're going to get to this point with the advanced analytics where these kids are going to get drafted and they're not going to pan out, because they're going to be more concerned about the analytical side of the game than the actual playing of the game. Again, and another point of that is baseball, because with the Phillies, a couple seasons ago, they had this one kid who was hitting fantastically, and then they bring in this analytical manager, batting and hitting coach, and they're trying to have him like focus on velocity and hit percentage and all these other things of like how he's going to hit the ball, and his hitting percentage went down excessively because like all he's thinking when he's at the plate is all the analytics of what's my velocity is going to be, what, you know, and what are the odds that this pitch is going to come at me. And then the Phillies eventually brought in Charlie Manuel back to kind of like be an overseer and kind of be the new batting coach for the remainder of a season. And do you know what he told the kid? see the ball, hit the ball. Right. And guess what? And guess what happened? His hitting percentage went back up because they took all the analytics, all the garbage out of his head and just said, play the damn game.
But
and that's not, what needs to happen.
So much, it's not so much that you have to. Okay, the analytics tell a story. It's not as if you play like thinking, oh my God, my Corsi is going down. Oh my God, my XGF goes. That's not how this works. It's the analytics tell the story of how the player is performing on the ice. It's not something that you keep in your head all the time. This is what I need to do. It's just how are they doing? And it's just a metric to tell you how they are doing. And a lot of the time
I can tell how they're doing just looking at regular stats.
But that again, that's not
I don't need Corsi to tell that story.
That does not tell you the whole story. It doesn't. It really doesn't because, for example, if you took someone, okay, between last year and this year, if you just primarily look at points, you'll think, okay, Kaapo Kakko is doing okay. There's not much difference in his game between, if you just primarily look at points, he's doing okay. Not much different. But if you take a look into his XGA, XGF, Corsi 4, he's literally playing the game this year like Mark Stone Light. He's that good of a defensive player. He's that good for between his jump between his rookie season and his sophomore season.
But let me ask you something real quick.
Just by looking, not just based on his points, but by how he is.
But let me ask you something real quick. Let me ask you something real quick. You take those stats out and you just watch the game. And you actually just put a focus in watching Kaapo play, right?
Right.
Could you tell that without the stats? Because I could. I can tell when players are playing the game the right way and when they're not. For instance, when the Capitals traded Jacob Vrana, I thought it was a great move because Jacob Vrana doesn't play defense. When the Caps traded for Ilya Kovalchuk last season, I thought it was one of the dumbest trades ever because the guy doesn't play defense. And then somebody brought up a stat like, oh, well, they're only putting him on faceoffs when they're on offensive zone. Yeah, of course they are, because he doesn't play defense and he's a defensive liability. I could tell that just by watching the game. Sure. I could tell every time that the Caps are in the faceoff in their own zone, they're not going to put the guy on the faceoff just simply because you don't trust him. But I don't need those stats to tell that story because I watch the game and I play the game.
These are things that can help you judge a player further than just the eye test, and you can't completely disregard them in today's NHL and today's hockey climate.
Because you need it for gambling. Let's be brutally honest. You need it for gambling. Okay, let me put a perspective on here. I'm looking at Giroux's stats right now, right? 45 games played this season. He has 11 goals, 22 assists, 33 points, right? How many shots does he have? This is an important factor for him.
How many? Because again, shot percentage would be something you'd have to look at too. If he's getting lucky, unlucky.
Yeah. His shot, he's shooting it. He has 99 shots this season and he has 11.1 shooting percentage. Okay. So his shooting percentage is slightly up from last season. But the thing is though, is that his shots are so low compared to every other season he's played. Every other season that he's played, and he's always been like a 20 plus goal scorer, we'll give the 2016-17 season a pass because don't know what the hell happened that season. Yet again, he's also been showing up out of shape a lot. He hasn't been taking his off-ice conditioning very seriously. And that's according to a lot of reports on Giroux. And it's also probably a reason why Matt Niskanen retired, because when they came back for the return to play, he kind of saw how the team kind of just showed up for the sake of just being there and not taking it seriously. And if you're Matt Niskanen, would you really want to be there on that team if they're going to show up like that?
I mean, I'm sure Matt Niskanen just kind of had
it. I mean, he also had all the reasons.
Yeah, but like sure that's not the only reason why.
But like that could be a good strong reason, but we'll never know the truth on that one. But I wouldn't rule it out. But anyways, I'm looking at the last time he had a season like where he played this few games, and that was 2012-13. He had a 48-game season, and I think that was just lockout shortened. 13 goals, 35 assists for 48 points. He was a negative 7, and he had 22 PIMs, although the PIMs are kind of irrelevant. His power play stats, he had 6 goals and 21 points. this season, one goal and 9 points on the power play. And this is an $8 million player, and he's not performing on the power play, which is something that he has always been looked to as a catalyst for. His shots was 137 that season.
At the end of the day, he's still, let me see, let me pull it back up. But at the end of the day, they're not going to buy someone out that if he, and okay, maybe if he had more years left on his deal, sure.
He has 1 year left on the contract.
Exactly. So why would you not let your captain finish that out?
How many captains have ever been able to finish out their deals with teams?
But what?
How many captains have had the captaincy stripped from them to be given to other players? Looking at San Jose, who's done it like multiple times, and Dallas, who's done it multiple times.
And I don't see how you could do that when the entire team has been a letdown this season. Look, everyone from Carter Hart up to Claude Giroux through
Carter Hart. I have no idea what's going on with that kid.
Exactly.
And I think honestly, I think there's been a disconnect in Philadelphia with Carter Hart, which is unfortunate because he's a hell of a goalie. And I would still take him over a lot of other goalies just simply because also he's like 22 years old.
Also, Claude Giroux is tied for third in scoring on the entire team despite having a quote unquote down year. So I don't see.
Yeah, because the entire team's on a down year. When exactly, the entire team's so on why, a down year.
So why would you buy someone out when the entire team is having a bad year? Why would you do
one? It frees up he's one of the easiest guys to free up cap space with.
But I'm telling you, they're not going to do it. They won't do it.
I wouldn't be surprised
before Giroux goes.
I wouldn't be surprised if they do an implosion and they really bring up all these young kids because they got a lot of young kids that they got to play.
I don't think so because Alain Vigneault is the coach and that's not what he does. And I'm going to be that's from first.
Well, not only that, but let's also be honest. Chuck Fletcher is the general manager and Chuck Fletcher is known for trading away young people and screwing up chemistry at the same time, too.
But anyway,
that's why he wrecked Minnesota and then Bill Guerin's been working hard to rebuild that team.
To circle back, I think you need a healthy mix of both because honestly, if you don't watch the games, you're not getting a big part of the story. But I think it's foolhardy to just dismiss another tool to help you judge how a player is doing, which only helps. And you know what? This draft, this was a very interesting point brought up by Cam Robinson of Dauber Prospects. He made this point on Twitter a few days ago, and I think he's 1,000% correct. The draft this year is going to be one of the weirdest drafts. I'm sorry, Cam Robinson of Elite Prospects. But this draft this
get
year...
Get your sights right, boy.
drafts the NHL has had will be this year because we've had league suspensions because of COVID. We've had players barely play. We've had players shift around a lot to get playing time. And the point he made was scouting staffs that really take a look into the analytics of players this year, that do their video homework this year, and that you will see which teams truly put an emphasis on their scouting staffs this year and which don't, because the research to get a good prospect this year is going to be infinitely harder than it would be in a normal year.
I mean, everyone knows that this is going to be one of the hardest years, and potentially next year's draft will be a very hard year as well.
If you are an NHL GM and you say, "Oh, we don't care about any of this advanced stats," you're doing your entire franchise a disservice by not using a bunch of tools that are at your disposal to help you figure out which player could help your lineup in the future.
I'll tell my scouts, tell me who the best player on the ice and tell me where his flaws are and work with me on we can fix them.
These things are helpful when you take, like, for example, the KHL, for people that don't know, the KHL is a league where young players do not get a lot of time. No matter how good they are, it is very rare for a young player in the KHL to get playing time. So when you have a player like Vasily Podkolzin, or a few years ago when you had Vitaly Kravtsov in his limited playing time do what he did. Or, you know, you could go back. I don't know if the advanced stats were around back then or as advanced as they were back then, but I'd love to see some of the stuff on early Alexei Sharapenov or early Evgeny Kuznetsov, guys that wouldn't normally get a lot of playing time, where you have to look at them through another lens. Okay, how are they driving play on ice? How much time are you spending in the offensive zone when that player is on the ice? what is that player, you know, what is the expected goals of this player when he's on the ice? You know, he might not be scoring every time, but he's putting himself in position to score every time and get these good chances. Again, not fully one or the other, but these are all tools that help you in seeing what a player could become, where a player's headed, and how that player has been in his career so far. And that is why I appreciate looking at both sides. And that's why I'm not
and on. I don't give a damn about any of it because I can tell just by watching the game. Okay, I can watch a game and just tell how players are playing. I don't need advanced analytics to tell me the story about that. I watch the game and it comes from being somebody who has been playing hockey for over 20 years. You know, because you learn that as a player, what to watch for. You don't need the analytical stuff to learn that stuff and to figure that stuff out. I played
hockey for quite some time, too. A lot of these guys that are in, you know, Bill Guerin played hockey for a long time, too, I'm sure. Like, a lot of these guys in front offices, you know, they are not pushing this stuff to the side. If anything, there's more teams that are expanding their analytics department rather than telling them we don't need these people.
I would be the first GM to go, yeah, I don't need these guys. I want people who actually know hockey and don't try to talk
you're
it.
You're doing your entire franchise a disservice by not using more tools at your
disposal. I guarantee you in about 5 to 10 years after a bunch of analytical style draft picks happen and they don't pan out, especially high profile ones, it's going to go to the wayside and you're going to go back to the way of the eyeball test. And that's how it always should be. And how the number one thing that should always be looked at is the number one, the number two, and the number three thing that should always be looked at. Analytics should be more of a underlying thing. It should never be a focus thing ever. And it's and that's what, like I said, I brought up with the Phillies player, the batting average. They put all this analytical garbage into his head and it messed the kid. I almost cursed right there because that's how much this stuff annoys me. It messed the kid up in the head until Charlie Manuel went up to him and said, see the ball, hit the ball. And he just simplified everything. All analytics does is just complicate things for people. And that's why I don't care for it. I look at the basic stats that you need because that tells the story along with the eyeball test that tells you, I'm noticing this player is playing hard. I see what they're doing offensively. I see what they're doing defensively. I can see plays formulate without having to have advanced analytics to tell me it. And that's all I need. And that's all I've ever had to need. So I understand why you love it, but also at the end of the day, let's be brutally honest. And we see it with all these commercials because we see it like 55 billion times a game now. And it's all about the gambling. That's what this advanced analytics became about. It became about gambling and you cannot deny that fact either.
I doubt look.
Let's be honest, sports betting books, the new one that they put at the Capital One Arena, they literally have it where it's set up to go, hey, here's the advanced analytics on this. We think this guy is going to score a goal and they're going to give you a notification right off the bat, right when the guy hits the ice. This guy could probably score a goal because of this, 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 and this. Do you want to bet on it? That's what it's being used for now. You cannot deny it. And that's one of the things that's also extremely sickening about today, too, is the fact that they're using it for gambling and all this other crap just because they want more money.
That's not the primary focus of why of advanced
analytics. It's the prime focus of the leagues. It's the prime focus of the leagues because it's all about the money.
That's not why you expand your analytics staff. That's not why you do these things. It's not a be-all, end-all type thing. It's just another tool to help you see how a player's doing. I don't know why that's so controversial.
I like the controversy and I like to fight it. And I know my opinion pisses people off on it and that's okay.
I mean,
you and I are friends. So you and I will talk it out and just be like,
to me, it's foolhardy to not at least do some research into what it means and to understand it. And to
you've known me for quite a while. You know how stubborn I can be.
I didn't acknowledge it for a long time. And, you know, it helps my understanding of it more. And once you understand that, you kind of open a new train of thought for how you look at the game too. And it's all really interesting to me. And again, don't entirely rely on just the eyes and don't entirely rely on the analytics. But when you have a healthy combination of both, it gives you a really interesting perspective on the game of hockey moving forward and on individual players. And it's interesting to see that, you know, okay, when you watch a player on the ice, oh, that guy's unlucky. Why is he unlucky? And that's what I like what the advanced stats can tell you. Why is he unlucky? Like,
you want to know, one of the funniest things? You want to know one of the funniest things about the puck tracking stuff? So they're trying to do like the whole thing with the puck tracking. They try to determine like what a puck does and stuff like that. How do you predict weird bounces, like bounces that just don't go your way? Like, you can't put analytics on that because that's real time. You just because of weird, like, say you get a goal. Like, did you see the highlight reel that I created for the stream that I did yesterday, where Sky and I were playing the one game and we had that, like, we ended up scoring a goal, but the bounce that it took was so weird and unique. You cannot predict through analytics when that's going to happen. And that's something that the NHL wants to try to do with the puck tracking. I'm like, you cannot predict any of that stuff. I mean, sure, it's cool to see like how hard a player shoots the puck and stuff like that. Okay, that's kind of cool. We always like to know how hard Zdeno Chara is going to bomb a shot at a goalie, you know? We always find that funny. But like, you can't predict when a puck is going to take a weird bounce or something like that. And sometimes you can play the perfect game and you can do everything right, but just one mistake is going to happen and you're never going to be able to predict when that one mistake is going to come.
That's just saying, okay, yeah, obviously mistakes happen.
But the thing is that when you put in too much analytics into things, you take away the human element of the game. And that's why I don't pay attention to it, because I pay attention to the human element of the game, because you're never going to be able to predict a lot of stuff. So, but anyways, I like this banter. I do. You're just like all pissed off texting on your cell phone. It's like, man, Mike's such a jerk, blah, blah, blah.
No. Like, for those that don't know, I also play music on the side too, besides doing writing and podcasting. So a lot of music things have been coming up and I'm answering some group chat stuff.
No. But I'm saying how great of a banter this is between the two of us.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like the old school and the new school banter, I guess you can say. If anyone's pissed off by my viewpoints, I think I did my job then.
Because, yeah, I mean, look, you might not, anyone listening, you might not agree with one of our points or the other, but you know, we're not here to tell you how to think. We're here to give you conversation. And at the end of the day, you know, you might not like analytics. You might have Mike's point of view. You might have my point of view, where you like a mix of both, and that's okay. Like,
or you have a completely different point of view, and if you do, please tell us about that different point of view, because we'd be interested in hearing it.
I, as someone who didn't fully embrace them, and now I've put a lot of research into the past few months on them and how they were made and what they exactly represent. It's a pretty interesting way to explain just things about a specific player or a specific team, even when you do team-based analytics. But you know, we just want to see our teams do good at the end of the day, and it's just another tool to gauge how they're doing.
Yep. But good banter, yeah. Russell. You know,
I'll talk about this all day.
So, anyways, with that said, we talked Mighty Ducks, we talked playoff scenarios of teams clinching with only three teams clinched, and my hair is starting to throw over my headphones at this point, which is a sign that we need to wrap up. For those wondering, I have Jewish curly hair, so my hair does the Jew fro thing all the time. Thank God we're not on video and this is strictly audio only, but Russell is secretly laughing on the inside at me for how stupid my hair looks.
Oh, I mean, mine's not too much better, so.
Your hair looks beautiful compared to mine. You have a nice flow. It looks sharp. Mine just looks like I rolled out of bed. But anyways, Russell, where can the people find you on social media?
You can find me at RussellHartman1 on Twitter. I'm still in the process of making a video game Twitch, but we'll get there. But for now, all my stuff can be found, all my ramblings can be found at RussellHartman1. I'm still waiting for that Nerdy Notions invite to come talk about this bad boy right here.
Hopefully it's going to be a while. It's like, trust me, I've been fighting Sasha. We're going to be doing, now that Falcon Winter Soldier is over and that episode went out, we're going to do New Mutants so we can finish up the Fox X-Men run. And then there's going to be a massive break taking place. Where she wants to go with the show after that, I don't know. She may want to go into DC right away. She may not. So it's kind of a stay tuned, and especially again, in June, especially in June with Loki coming out, we may just stick with that. I don't know.
Take your time. You guys do your thing. Anytime you like a guest on that though, like I love comic book stuff. I just actually bought, after I saw that last episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier, I'm sorry, Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
Well, it's still technically Falcon Winter Soldier. They just, they end it with Captain, which was nice. I enjoyed that. But,
The first thing I did was go on Amazon and I bought the two big Sam Wilson Captain America collections. And I cannot wait to read them because I just love everything about that character, everything about that journey that that character has taken. And the Isaiah Bradley stuff and Sam relationship was just right here. Like, incredible ending to that series. I cannot wait to see Anthony Mackie play Captain America again in Captain
America. And they pretty much confirmed Captain America 4. And the possibility of a Falcon Winter Soldier season 2. So,
which, please, give me more because, you know, I wasn't the biggest Falcon guy. And then this series entirely changed my perspective on... not just him. Well,
let's be brutally honest. The reason for that is because he was never a true focus. He was always more of a side character, a sidekick in a way.
And Anthony Mackie deserves this focus. His performance was awesome. And that suit is perfection.
Oh, yeah. And it's one of the most comic accurate. That's the word I was looking for. Accurate outfits in the entire MCU.
Yes.
But yeah, so anyways, finish up with your social medias.
Yes, so at Russell Hartman 1 on Twitter. And you can also find my work at blueseatblogs.com and Experience Hockey Talk, THXT.com.
THXT Hockey.com. Yeah, and then of course for me, you can find me on Twitter at TheLinMom75, Facebook at Facebook.com/THXT Hockey, I believe it is. Because I couldn't get the underscore hockey like with Twitter, which is at @THXT_hockey. And of course, the website THXTHockey.com. And you can find me on the Twitch where you'll see Russell from time to time when he's not doing other things in life. Yesterday. doing the Twitch thing, twitch.tv/TheMichaelX75. Please note that my schedule has changed because I have a new job. I'm not with Amazon anymore. I just worked my last day yesterday. I'm now working on Monday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. So a better schedule for my life work balance. And so I'm now streaming Mondays and Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern time doing Fall Guys and currently Ratchet and Clank. But it looks like we're about to wrap that game up and we're about to bring in a new game into the mix. And then Saturdays, starting this Saturday, we're going to be at 12 p.m. Eastern time every Saturday, pending NHL schedules and stuff like that. And doing the NHL 21. Apostles of Ruth is going to be playing some games, earning some bags, trying to level up. And we're in the Superstar Cup playoffs right now.
Good for us.
And unfortunately, our first game in it, which was on Twitch yesterday, we lost in overtime 2-1. Hard-fought game. That's twitch.tv/TheMichaelX75. And also, I have a co-stream collaboration with a friend out in the UK going to be starting up soon. And stay tuned for details on that. So with that, until next time, we'll see you on the ice.